Hello and welcome back to Debt Wired. I'm your host, Melina Halkia, and today we're diving into one of the hottest corners of private markets, the intersection of infrastructure, energy, and credit. We keep hearing about how AI is changing everything, from the way we work to the way we communicate. But behind this transformation, there's a big question. How do we power it all? With me today is Rick Campbell, Senior Managing Director at Blackstone Credit and Insurance, where he focuses on infrastructure and asset-based lending. Rick, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Melina. Thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
So you've been in infrastructure finance for nearly two decades. And before Blackstone, you spent 15 years at Citibank doing the same thing. How has the infrastructure financing landscape evolved since then?
That's a great question. I've been in sort of energy and infrastructure my entire adult life. And I think today, really three things sort of stand out. Number one, just private credit. And I think the ability of private credit to go directly up to borrowers is something that did not exist when I started my career. And so I think at a firm like Blackstone, when we're able to provide a comprehensive solution where we conduct our own due diligence and provide the holistic financing package across the risk spectrum in incredible and ever-increasing sizes is something that did not exist 20 years ago. We call it a farm-to-table approach, just going directly up to the borrower, bilaterally originating deals, I think is really exciting and something that just, again, didn't exist. I think the second thing is just the size of infrastructure projects today. I mean, it's incredible. When I started my career, like if you did a $500 million deal, like you slapped each other on the back, you went out and celebrated, that was a big deal. Today, infrastructure projects are the size of big companies. We closed an investment in a $14 billion liquefied natural gas plant in Texas. I mean, that's a company. And I think, again, being able to do that kind of hand in hand with a large public investment grade company, again, something new didn't really exist. When I started my career, you know, projects today are the size of like the island of Manhattan, and they consume as much power as on an annual basis as some of the states in the U.S. So I think it's just the growth, the size of the projects, the scale, incredible. And then certainly as part of that is digital infrastructure, data centers in particular. Again, I think just energy and infrastructure are sort of constant themes throughout my career, but today, you know, so much, and not only the data center itself, but around the data center, sort of the picks and the shovels, the hardware that goes in the data center, so much to do there. And I think when you look at the fact that some of the biggest companies in the world, from, you know, one to now $5 trillion market cap companies, are taking place in this sort of digital revolution, really exciting. There's been a lot of growth over the past 20 years, but we think even more to come.
Is the digital infrastructure and the need for AI and data centers, is that what's driving most of the need for infrastructure capital?
It's certainly sort of, I would say, one of the two mega themes that we're seeing right now and where we're focused, but it's so much more than that. And some of it's related, so power and energy infrastructure. So these data centers, again, some of them require, you know, as much power as a state. And so you've got to take power from where it's cheap, abundant, and secure to where it's needed. And so that requires new generation, it requires new transmission. So I think it's sort of the energy transition, energy infrastructure is a second mega theme alongside kind of digital infrastructure, where we've been very active. Again, liquefied natural gas plants to really help meet the global demand for energy. And then natural gas transmission. And then I think probably the next area sort of now with sort of the reindustrialization that's occurring here in the country, just kind of the onshoring of manufacturing capacity. You know, I think during COVID, people realize like supply chains matter. And so I think having access to goods is critical today. And we're working with Fortune 500 companies to help them, you know, bring manufacturing capacity here into the States. And I think that's, you know, I think these large public companies have been pretty delighted, I think, with this, our ability to kind of match their scaled capital needs with our scale. So I think the re-onshoring of manufacturing capacity is another key theme that's driving our business, both on the supply and the demand side. The demand for the manufacturing of key inputs, and then I think people, you know, just like diversifying their supply chains, want to diversify their funding sources. And so on the supply side, they're very interested in funding that manufacturing capacity with private credit.
That's very interesting. So we're seeing kind of these two areas converge, right? You said the energy transition, the digital infrastructure, need for power. What's the energy mix there? Are we seeing more renewables dominating the market, or is it more of a mix between different types of energy generation?
I think it's really all the above. I think the need for power is so great that I think it's access to power. So number one, where can I get access? And that land and powered land is very valuable. So however a company can procure power, it will pretty much do so. And so I think whether that's wind, whether that's solar, whether that's gas, it's really, the quickest way to get power from just an engineering perspective is probably to build a new wind or solar farm, generally a 12-month cycle. But there are some drawbacks there. Natural gas sort of can provide base load power, not subject to how much the wind blows or how little the sun shines. But it takes a little while to get your hands on a gas turbine. And then it takes, again, from an engineering perspective, sort of 3 years to put that together, for better or worse. So, I think what we're doing is working with sort of Fortune 500 companies around sort of all supply sources, and how do we best kind of meet their needs and help them kind of access power or transmit power as quickly as possible, because they need to meet their customers' needs. And so I think it's really an all of the above.
So when we're talking about the rise of AI and data centers and the growing demand for power, are data center developers now starting to build their own generation capacity? Is that something we're seeing more and more of?
People need speed. They need scale. I think where they're able to access the grid via the utility, they'll do so. Other times, if they can procure power faster, then they'll do that. And so I think the key ingredients which excite us for some of these data centers sort of building their own generation capacity is, again, goes back to the fact that we've got hard assets. I mean, that's what we do. If you take a step back, kind of what is infrastructure credit? It's generally defined as taking a senior position in a hard asset that's got some sort of contracted or resilient cash flow stream. So if we can sort of get our hands on a power generation asset that's feeding a data center. So now we've got two pieces of critical infrastructure. You've got the power generation asset itself, the data center, and then these data centers are generally leased to, again, the largest companies in the world. And so I think when we can effectively lend against that hard collateral with a 15 to 20 year cash flow stream, whether that's on the basis of sort of lending to a utility that earns a regulated return, produces very defensive cash flows, we like that. But if we can also partner with a data center developer or sponsor to help them source and develop power on site, sort of behind the meter, then we want to do that. Because again, those cash flows, sort of that project-on-project risk, we like, because we can diligence sort of the construction risk angles of both the data center and the power plant, and we can diligence sort of those cash flows that are being generated from these leases and investor-grade counterparties that are servicing not only the data center, but the power plant as well.
How common or feasible is this at this point? I assume it's very early innings.
We certainly think so. I mean, I think sort of the hyperscalers have cumulatively said that they're going to spend maybe over $2 trillion through 2030 for the build out of new data centers. So I think we're certainly in the early innings. And again, those data centers, they require power. And so there's a lot to do there. And I think folks ignore the AI revolution and advancement sort of, particularly as an investor, at their own peril. What's happening in that space right now is really incredible. Sort of be a part of the sort of digitization of everything as a lender, where you've got hard asset, contracted cash flows, and those contracted cash flows come from investor-grade counterparties, is what really excites us as an infrastructure.
So when you say that they're underestimating that part of the market, you mean you're not seeing as many lenders come in to provide the capital, or could you elaborate a little
bit? There's certainly a lot of excitement around data centers and AI. And I think, though, like our view is like that excitement is warranted. Because I think of just the demand for compute, and as our daily lives get up more and more onto the cloud and content's created, that requires storage. Just like it goes back to energy. Just like energy needs stored, it needs transmitted, needs to be safe and secure. Kind of the digital information and the digital economy requires that same infrastructure. And so if you think about, again, those companies spending $2 trillion over the next 5 years, it's really warranted. Whenever you're able to take part in projects with high quality participants or sponsors, developers, you know, that's something that, you know, I think certainly warrants attention.
I want to touch on something you previously mentioned. Obviously, historically, these infrastructure and energy projects have been financed almost entirely by banks. But now we're seeing private credit step in to fill a much bigger role. Why are we seeing that shift? Why are borrowers choosing private credit over banks?
I think number one is just the ability of private credit to really tailor a bespoke solution to a borrower. I think if you take a step back, sort of traditionally, borrowers, you know, have had access to public equity. That's very expensive, dilutes the shareholder, or they have access to public debt. And you can issue a 5-year bond, a 7-year bond, a 10-year bond, but not much in between. And I think what private credit's done and where we at Blackstone have really focused on is what we call corporate solutions. So how can we meet the sort of the growing capital needs of these Fortune 500 companies in a sort of unique and creative way that's not otherwise available in public markets? And so I think it's the demand is one reason, just, and it takes everyone, banks included, but I think just the demand for capital in the energy transition and the digitization of everything is sort of really a call on private credit. And then I think there's sort of the supply of private credit. I think if you think about our, you know, we talk about sort of the three I's, the individual in terms of our investors and clients, the individual kind of institutions, and then insurance companies. So I think the sort of the growth and scale of our insurance platform today is helping meet that need to fund these large mega projects. These insurance companies, they've got long-dated liabilities and they're looking for long-dated assets. And infrastructure is generally defined by sort of long-life perpetual assets. And so when we're able to help our insurance clients match their long-dated liabilities with these long-dated assets, high-quality companies, hard assets, senior positions, contracted cash flows, it's really a win-win. And I think that's just something, again, that didn't exist, you know, when I started my career. And I think about where our insurance platform is today is over $260 million of insurance capital, you know, AUM. They want safe investments. They want long-duration investments. And I think we're able to provide that in these key infrastructure projects.
So to touch a little bit more on the concept of corporate solutions, how are these deals typically structured? And you said we're providing long-dated asset-backed structures. What do these look like? How do they differ from the more traditional private credit we see?
So I think number one, we define corporate solutions is really partnering with large Fortune 500, generally public investment grade companies. And then number two, finding key or strategic assets, you know, that they either have on their balance sheet today and would like to monetize or want to develop and spend significant growth capital to sort of stabilize and bring online. And so we're going directly to these, you know, to these borrowers and offering them really flexible, efficient solutions that are made possible by our insurance capital. Again, looking to match their long life liabilities with these long life assets. And the companies really feel the same way. You know, they want to sort of match their assets and liabilities. They've got a long life asset. And so when we're able to create this really tailored solution, they can fund construction, they can fund over time, doesn't have to fund promptly. I mean, if you're a company and you're building a $14 billion liquefied natural gas plant, it takes 5 years to build. So when we went to Sempra and we said, look, instead of giving you all that money today and you incurring a cost when you don't really need the funds today, we'll fund with you over time. That was very powerful to them and saved them money. Just investing in size, I think also is just, again, it's attractive for both the borrower and us as a lender. Because I think companies today, again, they're not looking for $500 million solutions. They're looking for solutions measured in the tens of billions of dollars. And so as a team and investment professionals, like, you always want to have an edge in whatever you're doing. And so that requires a lot of work and a lot of diligence. So if you're going to put all that work in, you'd rather invest a lot of money than a little money, because it takes the same amount of diligence and the same amount of work at the firm, regardless of whether the opportunity is small or large. So when we're able to, these corporate solutions, to partner with big companies and big projects, and not only invest large sums of capital today, but set up a partnership where we can fund over time and scale with that company, it's a win-win. And these corporate solutions are really, while a lot's changed, I think, in the infrastructure markets over the past 20 years, you know, I think it's really, this part really hasn't changed. And it goes back to having a hard asset, a senior position in that asset, long-term contracts with investor-grade counterparties. You know, I just think sort of it's the source of that capital in private credit that's really new. And our ability at Blackstone to kind of match the scale and the size of these projects that's really new.
And these are quite interesting structures, like the Sempra Port Arthur LNG project you recently did. It's quite an enormous undertaking, $14 billion investment. How do these structures bridge the gap between debt and equity? I mean, they're technically structured as equity, but they're acting more like credit.
It's exactly right. So number one, sort of what does it take to create this solution? We talked about the size and scale. I think it takes a real brand. What makes Blackstone the partner of choice, I think, is our franchise and its sort of role as a trusted partner. I think that, you know, that takes time. We're celebrating our 40th anniversary here this fall. I think people want to be with a partner that's got a proven track record. You know, that's a real, I think, competitive advantage of ours. And then it really takes a lot of structuring and rating agency expertise, and I get to the kind of the equity component of that. But, you know, these deals, we're taking a team of a dozen plus folks offline for several months to put together these, you know, this $14 billion partnership with Sempra. And so in terms of, you know, what we're doing is not really anything different than what kind of maybe our colleagues in infrastructure equity are doing. We're making a legal form equity investment into an asset. That's, you know, really nothing new there. I think the difference is, you know, infrastructure equity sponsors would traditionally raise debt from banks. And banks do a lot of things well. They, you know, they lend short very well. But, you know, like we talked about, these assets are long life. So the Port Arthur LNG 2 asset will be operational for 40 plus years. And so I think as an investor, you want to match your assets and your liabilities. And so that's where I think insurance capital, private capital really has a role in that we can set up here a perpetual partnership. You know, we don't have to take refinancing risk, capital markets risk, where this debt has to be taken out in 7 years. And so I think that's the unique sort of structural element is, instead of using sort of short-term bank debt that has these risks, we're using insurance capital that's looking for long duration, safe, sort of investment grade quality investments, senior position in a hard asset. It can fully amortize over the life of these long-term contracts. I mean, this asset in particular is going to sell its services or capacity to liquefy natural gas over 20 years to investment grade customers. So when we can make an investment in a proven asset sector that we really like and have that investment amortize over the life of investment grade contracts, again, that's the ultimate win-win.
So are private lenders taking up a larger share of the market from banks? Are we seeing more still of a balance where we're headed toward private credit?
Well, I think it's a really exciting time because number one, just the market's growing. And so I think anytime you're able to participate in a growing market and capture market share, that's really powerful. And so I do think what we're seeing is sponsors and Fortune 500 companies say, if I can really match my assets with efficient long duration capital in size, I want to do that. So if I can work with Blackstone and just have and deal with one counterparty, as opposed to having to go to a syndicate of lenders, negotiate with 25 participants on docs, and there's haggling and whatnot. If I can just take a comprehensive credit solution from one person, it's a very compelling solution. And so I do think you'll continue to see private capital sort of continue to gain share in the funding of infrastructure. Number one, just because it's able to match the long assets with long liabilities. I think number two, because it's able to deliver in scale. And number three, that scale can be delivered by one counterparty. I mean, what we do at the firm is we sort of take the power of our 33 plus strategic insurance partnerships and SMAs and deliver this sort of one-stop shopping to the borrower. And there's no friction cost from intermediaries or others. So it can at times actually be a lower cost. And it's certainly a process that is quicker, more certainty of execution, because again, we're coming right up to the borrower in this sort of farm-to-table solution. And so I think you'll see more and more of these corporate solutions and private credit kind of driving the growth of infrastructure.
And of that scale, I assume more of these really massive projects, firms like Blackstone stepping in to fund them. Was the Sempra deal one of the biggest ones you've done in the space?
again, it's been an exciting time at the firm and in the market. So the three largest deals in the history of Blackstone Credit Insurance have all taken place in the past 12 months. And each one has been in this one of these corporate solution partnerships. So the Sempra infrastructure joint venture was for the $14 billion Port Arthur LNG 2 expansion. We made a $7 billion investment there. Earlier this year, we closed a joint venture with Rogers, the Canadian telecommunications company, on its sort of critical backhaul network infrastructure. That was a $5 billion transaction. And then late last year, close to $3.5 billion joint venture with EQT, sort of the largest natural gas company in the country, taking secure, cheap, abundant natural gas here, kind of from the Pennsylvania, Ohio area down into Data Center Alley. Again, it goes back to like what's new today that what's kind of changed over the past 20 years of my career, just the size of these projects. And so I think because it takes just as much work and diligence to do, a small thing as it does a big thing, let's do the big thing and let's scale it. Because I think, anytime we feel like we've got the opportunity to invest capital and have it perform well over a long period of time with a high quality partner, that excites us.
So we've spent the past several minutes talking about the industry's tailwinds and the massive demand of power that these undertakings require. But of course, every market has its headwinds. I'm curious, what are some of the challenges you're noticing in the market today?
You're right. I think there are a lot of tailwinds. Certainly, we want to be very vigilant in terms of our underwriting standards. And so I think that's what's really key, is that whenever there is large growth, to make sure that you are maintaining the same underwriting standards a year from today, or 2 years from today, or 10 years from today, than we did at the firm 40 years ago when the firm was formed. And so I think and that can be challenging, because there's so many opportunities. And so I think sort of I think one of the biggest challenges or opportunities that we face is making sure we're focused, on the right priorities, because there's a lot to do. And you can get distracted, I think, on some of the shiny objects here or there, on the wrong things. And there's real opportunity cost to getting distracted. And so I think there's just, there's so much to do. I think it's really making, staying focused on the right priorities and maintaining those underwriting standards of, again, sort of senior most position. Is this a high quality sort of sponsor counterparty that we're dealing with? Is it a good neighborhood? I mean, both by way of sector, is this investment being made in a sector and theme that's consistent kind of with our business plan in the energy transition and digital infrastructure? If yes, let's go. If no, why? Okay, well, why? Why is that? And maybe it warrants, further work and diligence, maybe not. There are contracts, not all contracts are created equal. And so I think whenever we're dealing with an investment that's underpinned by contracted cash flow, your investment's only as good as your contract. And so I think, the sanctity of that contract and the counterparty on the other end is critical. And I think that's where sort of the bilateral origination and the platform we've set up at the firm is really important. Not only to, I think, delivering sort of one-stop shopping to our borrower counterparties, but to our clients, because it's the ability to perform our own diligence, negotiate our own documentation, review those contracts with our own independent legal counsel. I think that really creates good outcomes for both sides, the borrowers and our clients.
And in terms of the macroeconomic and the geopolitical and, supply chain backdrop, is that constructive for the infrastructure industry that we're in today?
I think number one, sort of as a lender, like, we're not really taking sort of regulatory risk. So if in our view, we feel like a change in regulation regime, is a risk, like that feels pretty binary to us as a lender and not really something we're willing to tolerate. So I think that's number one. I think number two, look, there's always uncertainty. But I think that's uncertainty today is like really generate a lot of opportunities for us. You're right, like with tariffs, with supply chains, I think borrowers want to reduce their risk of sort of a funding sources and diversify their funding sources, just like they wanted to sort of de-risk their supply chains and make sure, okay, do I have a secure supply chain? Do I have a diversified supply chain? And so I think some of that uncertainty is really what's fueling our growth, particularly with these Fortune 500 companies, because they view sort of the risk mitigation of diversifying their funding sources and having a long-term sort of anchor lender as critical to fueling their business plan. And because they've got customers, and they can only meet those customer needs if they have the capital. and public markets are subject to a lot of volatility. And so I think, you know, if they can find a partner like Blackstone, that sort of, again, is just can deliver one-stop shopping quickly, that really, I think, is it helps them sort of navigate some of this uncertainty you talked about and some of the risks there.
Well, it really feels like we're entering a very fascinating era for infrastructure finance. And it's clear that private credit is and will continue to play a defining role in funding those projects. Rick, thank you so much for joining us and breaking all that down for us.
Melina, thank you very much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for checking out this episode of Debt Wired. As always, you can subscribe and download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights and research from our team at DebtWired.com. See you next time.